Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We're going to be focused on the spine market this week. Specifically, we're going to be talking with the principals, the leaders at High Ridge Medical, CEO Rebecca Whitney, Executive Chair Eric Major. We've seen a huge shakeup in the spine market. We're going to learn where High Ridge fits into this and what makes spine so different. So before we get into that, Chris Newmarker is back with the Newmarker's Newsmakers. Number one is the aforementioned shakeup in the spine. I don't want to give it away anymore, but yeah, that's something to look forward to. Before we begin the podcast, make sure you join us at Device Talks Boston. It's happening on April 30th and May 1st at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. You can go to boston.devicetalks.com to register. We announced our keynote speakers this week. We'll be rolling out a lot of announcements on LinkedIn and through emails. So make sure you you join us. It's going to be a fantastic 2 days. And for those folks in the Twin Cities, I can't wait to be back there with Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. Can't wait to get back into Minnesota and tell so many great MedTech stories coming from there and other parts of the country. So it's going to be a great day in Minnesota. Before all of that, in fact, just a few days away on February 4th, Device Talks Tuesdays is taking a bit of a different direction. Just for this one episode, we're going to do the deep dive. Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, and I are going to be co-hosting this one. And we're speaking with Doug Evans from Lung Pacer. Doug's got an unbelievable MedTech story and really cool technology. And I really want to, I'm really looking forward to sharing that on Device Talks Tuesday. So make sure you you register for that. That's free. You can watch that live. If you're watching it live, you can ask your questions. If you're watching it on demand, you can enjoy the questions that others are asking. So we'll get back to a full Device Talks Tuesday schedule in just a couple of weeks. But very happy to bring you that conversation, that deep dive with Lung Pacer Medical. All right, folks. Let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Woo-hoo! Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well, Tom. Doing well. It's moving along. So.
Excellent. Chris, I feel bad. We did not record a Newmarker's Newsmakers last week.
We didn't.
And I missed out on an opportunity to congratulate your Buckeyes on a very significant achievement.
Yeah, right?
Beating the Purdue men's basketball team at Mackey Arena. That's pretty amazing.
That's pretty amazing, too. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's did something else happen?
Oh, yeah. You're right. The basketball team. Yeah. Woo! OH! Woo!
I mean, that's incredible. Yeah,
nothing
that's
could top that, that no. You know, for Ohio State athletics. I mean,
I think something else happened the night before, right?
I do love how, like, I mean, I think people outside Ohio don't realize, like, the level of hate and rivalry and the Ohio State Michigan rivalry that there's still, like, I mean, you get still a little bit of that, like, well, we ran a national championship, but, you know, lost to Michigan, you know, it's like, I mean, it's a national check. Come on. Yeah.
Being a Red Sox fan, I understand that completely. I mean, I don't think our 2004 championship would have been nearly as sweet if we hadn't completely pantsed the New York Yankees on the way. So it was a twofer. I can get you. Some people are like, I don't even care if we win the World Series now because we beat the Yankees. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, of course we're in the World Series. That's all I really wanted was to beat the Yankees. Shut up.
You're like, come on, it's World Series. Come
You're
on.
Taking this too far.
I mean, I know Boston won a lot of World Series through the 20th century. So, I mean, it would have been...
We did. We kicked butt from 1910 to 1918. We were.
I always love the owner traded Babe Ruth away to the Yankees because he wanted to fund a musical.
No known in that. Yes. Yes. He needed. Thank you, Harry Frazee. Yes.
Burn hell. Sorry, anyway. Harry. Harry, we love you. It's all right.
Congratulations to Buckeyes on both the national championship.
Always gives me a nice glow for the rest of the winter. Makes me, you know, it'll be good.
And I hadn't realized that it comes the year after Michigan won, right? I mean, this is the Michigan we're talking about.
Yeah.
So that's even a little more of a cake in the face for Michigan fans. Like Jason Weidman at Medtronic, I'm sure he's fuming right now that Ohio State won. He's a big Michigan fan. Yeah, he was very happy.
Oh, he's a big Michigan fan. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. He's probably like, whatever. We got our championship. like, we beat you this year. They won. They won the big game. They won the game. So good. All right.
I'm glad you had a great week. I'm sorry we couldn't recount it on the Newsmakers last week.
There we got it. We got it done.
We're making up for it.
Making up for it.
All right, cool.
All right.
Chris Neumacher, you've got quite a list of news this week. I think you could throw all of these newsmakers up in the air, and I think almost any way they'd land, we'd have a good ranking. So start where you want to start.
Let's do it.
Not a dud in the bunch.
Yeah. I think let's start out with this was from me, actually.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Actually, all of this is for me. I'm busy this week because Sean's on vacation. Yeah.
I thought it was because I gave you crap last time because most of them were by Sean. This is like
outside. I was like, Sean, it's all right. Take it easy. No, Sean is on vacation. Good
Sean's
for
on
him.
Vacation. No, he's still not writing stories though. I kind of thought he would have kicked.
I know.
In
I was
three.
Hoping he would. No.
He is in Ireland.
Sean,
so,
I know you're in Ireland, but could you just know?
They had MedTech there. He could have found a couple of things. Oh, but anyway, all right. Well, good for Sean. And good for you, chip it in like that.
There we go, right?
What is number five, Chris Neumacher?
Yeah, there we go. So Stereotaxis says they've had their first order for their next-gen surgical robot, the Genesis X. They say that they didn't disclose the exact name, but they said it was a pioneering European hospital had the first order for their robot, which got a CE mark in Europe last year. But for people who don't know what Stereotaxis is, this is like robotic surgery for in the endovascular space, and it uses like robotic magnetic navigation. So it's kind of like, it's one of these really interesting companies that, I mean, Intuitive is like the big, the big domineering surgical robotic company in the hospitals, but it's like one of these like really interesting companies that's doing something kind of like, it's really has an interesting niche to do something neat in surgical robotics and, do these kind of like cath lab cardiac procedures with robots. So, good milestone there. And they actually had extra news this week that they got a CE mark for their magic ablation catheter, navigated magnetic ablation catheter. So, and both of these things still are awaiting an FDA nod in the United States.
And just to be clear again, the movement of the catheter is driven by the magnetics, the two magnetic arms above the patient. Like that's the that's the robotic element, not the catheters themselves. So it's a different way to move the catheter through. Yeah, it's a real novel technology. Mm-hmm. It's been around for a while. It's nice to see them make progress. I know they we had them on the podcast 3 or 4 years ago, and they had definitely gone through a redirection. So looks like it worked. So good for Stereotaxis. All right. What do we have on number four, Chris Neumacher? Big news on the regulatory front.
Yeah, I mean, we have news on who the acting commissioner of the FDA is. It's an interesting situation right now. They're all under a communications freeze. So their basically response was, we're under communications freeze, but you look at their leadership bios and they have an acting director there, and it's Dr. Sarah Brenner, who actually was working inside CDRH, and so she's now the acting commissioner while we wait to for the confirmation of President Trump's nominee to be the next FDA commissioner. Trump has nominated John Hopkins University surgeon Dr. Martin Makary to lead the agency.
So Dr. Brenner will serve until a commissioner is appointed.
Exactly.
So is the commissioner is that a Senate approval?
Yeah, that's a Senate confirmed position.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's not the NHHS appointment. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Do we have any sense of when that hearing might happen. Obviously, their hearings are underway, but I haven't seen any timeline as to when we might see that one.
I was checking around for that earlier this week, and it looked like it didn't look certain at that time, like when. But I'm sure it's coming soon. I mean, you're seeing a lot of these confirmation hearings just like kind of happening in the Senate and moving forward right now, and you know, Macri definitely. A good. You know, there's definitely a lot of Trump appointments that have been really controversial. But Macri, I mean, he definitely had a reputation. Mm-hmm. It seems during the, you know, pandemic for you know being having some like kind of contrarian views, but at the same time, he's very much, you know, very very much a well-known, you know, person in the medical area. You know, Johns Hopkins. You know, very.
It's difficult to argue against his qualifications, so
exactly.
I would be surprised if, especially given all the given the concerns about some of the higher level appointees, you could see these reasonable appointees going through fairly easily. But we'll see.
I thought it was interesting too that Dr. Brenner. She actually was a coordinator. You know, did a lot of coordination with the COVID response and. You know, it looks like her history includes actually like there was, you know, work inside the Trump White House during the first administration. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it seems kind of like moving up somebody to the acting director spot who, might have some good insights about how kind of like a Trump administration, you know, works in some way since, from 2018 to 2019, she was senior policy advisor for health and biomedical innovation at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. So, you know, like that could kind of like, you know, provide some, it seems to be like something that would definitely, you know, make her a good person to be acting director for now.
Yeah. I haven't had any conversations with anyone about this topic, but have you heard if the FDA has slowed in any way, given all the freezes that have gone on at the federal level? I have not seen anything or heard anything or talked to anyone about that, but I'm just wondering if
I think that's something we definitely need to look into more is the operations of the FDA like slowing down right now?
Yeah.
Like amid all this just kind of like, you know, everything going on, you know, inside the civil service and the federal government right now.
I feel like we would have heard it, but maybe not. And I think we'll probably the first, if something is happened or has happened, I bet we'll hear about it when earnings calls are in a couple of months for Q1. Mm-hmm. That'll probably be when it comes up, similar to Intuitive's comments about the tariffs possibly impacting their future revenue with their plant in Mexico. So,
yeah. How much of a bet do you think it could be like the earnings call equivalent of the dog ate my homework? Like can't get that FDA approval yet because it's just things are...
I mean, I think you gotta get it out there, right? Full disclosure and all that. But yeah, you're right. I think there probably has to be some there before people start bringing it up. And there's certainly there with the tariffs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's talked about quite a bit.
Totally.
But I haven't heard anything about any sort of regulatory slowdown. But if anyone listening has, feel free to reach out to
me. Yeah, we'd be really interested to hear about
Chris
that.
And myself.
Absolutely.
Actually, reach out to Chris. But
Tom's like, I'm busy. Go talk to Chris.
He's the news guy.
I'm Chris the news guy. We'll look into this. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Chris Neumarker, what's number three on the Neumarker's Newsmakers?
Well, number three on the list, we've got Philips is selling its emergency care business to a U.S.-based private equity firm. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of private equity news this week.
We did.
I remember, Joe Mullings, Group, yep. Like just like
Joe Stradamus,
that's
baby.
Right. Like a past lifestyle closet is like, you know, private equity is really looking at the big med techs and looking for investments and even acquisitions. And yeah, here we go. I mean, there was a lot of examples of that this week. And, in this case it was Bridgefield Cap.
We'll talk about one of them at the number mm-hmm. one. Not on the list is, I don't think it is.
Henry Schein had a significant private equity investment this week.
Yep. Now that was not a spinout of any kind. That seemed to be more of an investment.
Yeah, KKR invested $250 million in Henry Schein, you know, which is like a major medical products manufacturer and distributor. And this is more like a deal where they've made this investment. They have the ability to up their stake even more. I mean, it's like a 12% stake at this point. They're the, you know, kind of like largest non-institutional investor in the company and getting board seats out of it. So yeah, definitely. I mean, the tone of that news release definitely sounded like this was a, you know, definitely like a partnership going forward. Even their CEO is calling it a partnership oriented approach. So there we go. So
this is definitely an investment in an operation. And KKR isn't typically, I don't think, seen as a sort of an activist investor.
No.
I wouldn't expect a sort of Massimo situation.
No, this seems
to build.
Seems very much more like the tone, like we like what we like what we see, and we think we could do things to make it even better for you. Let's see what we can do. And here's an investment. Yeah. So yeah, that's exciting.
Speaking of Massimo, you sent me the Newsmakers last week, but we weren't able to review them. But Massimo has Katie Simons as its CEO, formerly of Edwards.
Yeah.
So
very cool.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. To see if we can, if she's listening, please join us at Device Talks West, October 15th and 16th. I'd love to have you as a keynote. I don't think she's listening. You think
she's listening.
Thanks, Chris. Why wouldn't you listen to this award-winning podcast?
Award-winning.
We've never won an award. No, but in our hearts, we've won awards. Anyway, all right. What is the number two newsmaker, Chris Neumacher?
You know, number two on the list, we've got Zimmer Biomet spending they're going to spend $1.2 billion to buy Paragon 28. This is like a foot and ankle play, you know, to kind of like widen, you know, ZB's offerings, you know, in that space. And, you know, and also like, you know, they're kind of saying this could really enable them to have kind of like this comprehensive portfolio, you know, for, you know, ambulatory surgery center customers, which, I mean, ambulatory surgery centers have just been, you know, increasingly growing, just really growing market for the medical device industry. So, you know, so it's interesting. And, you know, and the analyst suggested that Zimmer Biomet's going to keep on shopping here. Like, you know, we should be looking out for more deals from them.
Absolutely. And I was looking into Zimmer Biomet's news on Mass Device just the last couple of months. And they've had an FDA approval for a new total knee component. And I'm sure in the headlines, FDA okay for Stemler's shoulder system. They had CE mark for Persona Knee. And an FDA approval for cementless partial knee. So they're really building out the portfolio. And very happy to have Yvonne Tornos as a keynote speaker at Device Talks Boston. They'll be opening up Device Talks Boston on April 30th and May 1st.
Awesome. Can't wait.
So very happy to have Yvonne Tornos at Device Talks Boston.
That's going to be awesome.
Go to boston.devicetalks.com to buy yourself some tickets.
Got to be there, be square.
Absolutely. That's the first be there, be square 2025,
I
believe.
That's right. Woo! Mm-hmm. Got a little horn there, like, hur. All right,
Chris Neumacher, what is the big number one other than your Ohio Buckeyes football team thing?
There you go. Well, you know, the big number one is, you know, another private equity deal. And this is, you know, Stryker is going to sell their U.S. Spine implant business to investment firm Viscosi Brothers, you know, and they're going to carve this in the new company, VB Spine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously it makes sense. I mean, it's spine is not a high growth area like Stryker's other businesses. So it makes sense to divest itself of a business like this. But it just acquired K2M back in 2018.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly quick reversal, but it's really exciting. I mean, the Scoliosi brothers have been in spine forever. Founded many companies, including those that fill the sales bags, so to speak, of Zimmer Biomet and others, and Abbott even before that, when they had a spine program that Zimmer Biomet had acquired in 2008. But anyway, it was great to see the Viscosi brothers back in the news again. I mean, they certainly have a lot of smaller spinal companies going on. This will put them in position to really compete in the spine business. And ironically, as I noted in my LinkedIn post.
Oh, I love that post. Yeah, like whole history you had of like.
They're competing with Eric Major, the executive chair of High Ridge Medical, and of course Rebecca Whitney, the CEO. But Eric Major had been the CEO of K2M, which sold to Stryker, which became Stryker Spinal Implant. So it's I don't know, spine, as I said in the post, is different, and we'll talk about that at length with Rebecca Whitney and Eric Major in the upcoming interview that I did with them just on Thursday night. They responded to the news, kind of wanted to give out their take on the acquisition and on High Ridge Medical's positioning. They're moving into a growth status, and they're at a conference, and they're literally, I thought, standing in a hallway at this conference because there were some people walking by. We had to stop the interview a few times. Come to find out after I pushed record to shut off the interview, they were both basically on their knees the entire time because the only way to have the laptop in front of them. So they both got. Can you imagine sitting on your knees for a half hour? I can't even imagine. Like,
oh my gosh,
I wouldn't have lasted 2 minutes. Like they both get up. Like, ow! I'm like, oh my god, you were on your knees. I'm like, I'm not trying to torture people. This isn't. Yeah. I'm not old gosh. Joe Rogan.
Oh my gosh! Wow!
What was that show? What was his old show, Joe Rogan, where he made people sleep with hornets and stuff like that?
I don't remember
something
that.
Factor, gosh. Fear factor.
Fear factor, yeah.
Oh my god. Not Device Talks, Fear Factor. So, but it was a great interview, and folks can listen to it. It'll be coming up. So, yeah, but interesting news for Stryker. I mean, can't argue with the results, right? I mean, they're hitting all cylinders, hitting and moving forward at a great clip. So, be interesting to see where they go from here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so. Nice week of news we had.
I know. And you'll be not taking a week off next week, but you'll be traveling next week. You'll be at the MD&M West conference.
Yes.
So
I'll be at MD&M West in Anaheim with our medical design outsourcing managing director Jim Hammerand. Yep. So if you see us around the show floor, like, say hi.
Yeah. Yep. Make sure you say hi to Chris Newmarker and let him know you listen to the podcast, and of course read him on Mass Device. And Jim Hammerand, the managing editor of Medical Design and Outsourcing. You guys always talk to some great folks out there. So
yeah, looking forward to all the meetings. They'll be great.
All right, great. All right. Well, Chris Newmarker, safe travels. Go Buckeyes. I'll give you that one for this time.
Woo! Go Buckeyes. All right.
Well, Rebecca Whitney and Eric Major, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Tom. It's great to be back.
Yeah, Tom, thanks.
So just for a sake of our listeners wondering about the sound, you folks are you're not in your comfy High Ridge offices like you were when you talked 6 months ago. You're out on the street telling the High Ridge story. Where are you now currently?
Yeah, we're at the Masters in Spine Conference up in Vail, Colorado. It's Dr. Larry Lanky's meeting and Dr. Chris Jaffrey. So some of the best deformity surgeons in the world are here this weekend, and we're very excited to sponsor this event and be here with these thought-leading surgeons.
And it's actually quite timely for us. The way we've leaned in as Triple Diamond sponsors at High Ridge, what's going on with Tether and our deformity systems, this meeting was perfectly timed for us as we go into and kick off 2025.
Awesome. So our astute listeners will remember that we talked to you about 6 months ago, introducing the High Ridge story to Device Talks Weekly listeners. We don't usually have folks back right away, but it's been an interesting week in spine with Stryker announcing that they were going to be spinning out its spine implant division, which ironically, Eric, you had sold to them just 6 years ago, 7 years ago, as CEO of K2M. So yeah. I want to just... I think we're going to talk. We can talk maybe just briefly about the spine industry, because I just listened to the podcast interview we did six months ago, and toward the end, it was almost like a prequel, because you were both sort of building on the excitement around spine and on the power of being a smaller company and how it's giving you sort of the energy and the tools to move forward. So, Eric, what is it about the spine industry, in your opinion, that, and Rebecca, I'd love you to follow up, that maybe lends itself to being more suitable for a smaller company? Or is that might not even be the right question, but certainly it seems as if there was the response that I got from a post on LinkedIn is that folks were very excited that companies were getting smaller, not bigger.
You know, I have an opinion on everything happening in it's fine. And it's an interesting time. But as I look back over our industry, this has been an ongoing shifting industry, right? And you've seen companies that have been able to find a way to navigate in this industry and others that have struggled. You look at the spin out from Zimmer to ZimV and now to Highridge. And why is that important? And, you know, what happened at Stryker and so forth? And I think at the core of it, spine, everybody in different industries talk about how unique their industries are and why they're different. You know, I've been in this industry 30 years. I fundamentally believe that we really are in a very different industry. We have customers that require our focus on them 24/7, 365. We have to be available 365 days out of the year. Why is that? Because our patients are on the table, our surgeons are in the OR. And I think that's different, especially for large companies that have other divisions that culturally don't run with that level of engagement, right? That level of pushing a culture to be that responsive. And what Rebecca has built at Highridge and the team that she's brought on is, number one, a team that is only spine. Everybody comes from spine and from different former companies, not all former K2, but built this culture around this responsiveness. And so when you look at these other companies, the two key factors for success for companies to help surgeons, because the surgeons ultimately help the patient. That's why we get out of bed in the morning, is for the patient. How do we do that? We work with the surgeon. And to do that, I think you have to focus on constant innovation. So you have to always be innovating. The spine surgeons are always looking for that next way to treat their patient with a better outcome. And you have to be listening to the surgeon, and you've got to be responsive. And that means that inside your company, across the entire organization, that people understand this 24/7, 365. It's intense. It's different. But it's the only way to really succeed in our industry is to remember that patient's on the table, and therefore we need to respond. So how is it different? I think larger companies tend to not always recognize that level of engagement that the employee base has to have in responsiveness.
That's great. And Rebecca, I want you to follow up, but I do want to state clearly, like, I'm not maligning anyone, any of the larger companies or their decisions to spin out.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're not as well, but, you know, as you noted, people, different companies, just like different people, have different strengths. So, Rebecca, you were correct me if I'm wrong. You were with Zimmer Biomet when they spun out to ZimV, and then ZimV initially had the dental business, if I'm remembering correctly, and then spun out to spine. So talk about that transition from the larger company, Zimmer Biomet, to where you are today. And if you wouldn't mind, if it's not too complicated a question for me to ask, build a bit on what Eric's talking about, the unique demands that are required to be in the spine business.
Yeah, I lived it. So I've actually seen this thing kind of go in reverse, which has been very interesting. Zimmer Biomet, obviously a very successful large hip and knee company. When spine is a 5% division of that, it gets very difficult to fight for focus and fight for resources. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And what happens as an output to that is you're not able to attract people who are passionate and driven to move spine forward because you're sort of stuck. And there's no fault. It's just the nature of being part of a large conglomerate that has multiple divisions and multiple sectors to feed and resource. And so with Zimmer Biomet, I found that despite our best intentions, we found it really challenging to, number one, innovate because the resources had to be split all over the place. And then number two, really focus on spine because you have people rotating in and out from all different divisions. And so you don't have a spine-only company, and therefore we weren't able to attract spine-only leaders who really understand and are very passionate about the business. When we spun out and became ZimV, we did get a bit better because we went from 5% of a huge company to 50%. And to your point, Tom, it was half spine and half dental. But the challenge there is ZimV almost becomes a holding company. You still had a bunch of shared resources. The board was still making decisions between do we fund dental or do we fund spine. And as a result, you still lost that ability to be laser focused on what spine means and what spine needs. And so now that we're Highridge, we've been Highridge for 10 months. In 2 days, it'll be our 10-month anniversary. And I can tell you, having watched this evolution from Zimmer Biomet to ZimV to now Highridge, it feels like a totally different company. We intended that, and it's been nice to see that that's actually happening. On the recruiting side, we have the best and the brightest that are coming to us now saying, we want to be a part of Highridge because we like the size of your company. We like the ability to move fast, make decisions rapidly, innovate quickly with our surgeon customers, and really build a company that is centered around the surgeon customer and the sales organization, which is very, very different. When you get bigger, I think process just inevitably starts to create some inertia and slows everybody down. That's true at any med tech company. You know, I've been in spine for 10 and a half years. Prior to that, I had 15 years of experience elsewhere, and that's true everywhere. But I think it's critically important in spine because there is such a focus on the surgeon that customer intimacy is like something I've never experienced in other sectors. And so I do think that we are the appropriate size and scale to be able to move quickly, make decisions rapidly, and ultimately work with these surgeons to move innovation forward in a very meaningful way.
Wow. And Tom, what I would add to that is the company prior to the spin out to High Ridge had been struggling for lots of different resources, lots of different issues, fighting for resources, things like that. Just in the 10 months since the spin out, now the company is back to growth. And that had been a struggle for a long time. We've got a company that's back to growth. We have people coming, surgeons, sales reps, agents, other talent that's coming over. And I think what they're seeing is this culture that is a combination of we're having a lot of fun. We're moving really fast and making decisions. The other thing that Rebecca has done, and it's something that I learned when I was running K2. At K2, what we had to do, And those technologies are now a decade, 2 decades old. But at the time, we were innovating like crazy, right? We were launching 3 to 5 new products every year. That was one of the core part of our success. So Rebecca has subsequently now, in this new go forward strategy, has doubled the R&D budget, stood up a number of different projects, and that is critical for success in this space. Now, how do you manage that? We fundamentally believe you can drive a profitable business with a growth-oriented focus. So you can have a profitable business that's growing at double digits. And you can do that in spine if you go back to that earlier cultural component that we talked about. And that is a team that is focused every day, all day, on innovation in the surgeon. And that is core to this. Now, it's easy to say and it's hard to do, and I think that's why we see companies come and go. But I think when you put that right team around a company, you can execute on that. And I think that's what we're doing here at High Ridge. And it's been exciting from when we had that interview with you, how much progress we've made and how quickly we've made that progress.
So how do you define it? And I should know what you mean, but now you're a growth company. Are you growing the business? Have you achieved some sort of financial, are you past breaking? What do you mean by being a growth company now?
The business has been in decline for the better part of the last decade, and it's for the reasons I mentioned previously, just lack of resource, lack of investment, lack of focus. And we knew when we stood up High Ridge that we had to make radical change very, very quickly to get this company back to where it needed to be. And so December was a turning point for us. We actually grew versus prior year, which means we're done donating share and we've got line of sight in 2025 to growth that it will be significantly faster than the market. So we will start to pick up market share in 2025, which is exactly what we intended when we rolled out this strategy.
Okay, cool. So going back to the point that this is a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year sort of job, I think anyone, others in other specialties listening to this probably would say, yeah, it's the same for me. It's the same for me in cardiology. It's the same for me, maybe not in orthopedics. But why is this the case in spine? Is it because a lot of the procedures are trauma-related? What is unique about spine that you think or you say requires such to be ready at any moment to serve your customers?
So when you look at this space, first of all, there's a number of competitors in the space. So to differentiate yourself, you've got to be the person or the company or the organization that is always ready to respond and be available for a discussion with a surgeon and respond to their needs. Coupled with that is our cases, while many are elective, and some of them are emergent-based cases. Cases in spine tend to go long, particularly scoliosis cases. You're talking sometimes 8, 10, 12 hours. And there's a lot of prep that goes into those ahead of those cases. The spine surgeons by default are focused on often very sick patients, not all the time, but very sick patients, and they expect to have the exact instrumentation and tools and the things they need to treat those patients, and it needs to be ready on a dime immediately when they call. So these other industries that you talk about, I think, have some less complexities when you think about, for a scoliosis case, we're going to take in literally, you know, hundreds of instruments and implants, almost like a tinker toy set, to give the physicians everything they need to treat those most difficult cases and those most difficult pathologies. And that kind of piggybacks on what I had talked about earlier. One of the things we're doing at High Ridge, because we have the tether and we're the leader in that tether space of innovation, we're following that with our vital deformity system, our triple diamond sponsorship of the SRS, our coming to meetings like the one we're at here, Masters in Spine, really leaning in to say we're going to listen. Mm-hmm. We already have a number of new technologies under development that as part of that doubling of the R&D to really bring those new technologies, which is what this industry needs. And I'll finish that by saying the doctors have an expectation that the companies are going to be available and responsive. And I can't speak to the other industries. I can't speak to the other specialties. But it is a very specific part of this industry with spine surgeons. And I don't know that every company fully appreciates that level of intensity that you have to have as a company to succeed in spine.
Follow up that, and within that, you know, what it sounds like spine folks are a breed unto themselves, and I would love to understand the characteristics of a spine person. It feels like it's a just from some of the reactions I got on LinkedIn, there's a real close self-identities to someone who is a spine person. There's a lot of pride there.
Yeah, I think that's true. Eric's been spine only his whole career. I have not, so I have that other experience to compare and contrast. It is the most complicated industry I've ever worked in, but it's so much fun. I've enjoyed it more than any other sector because it is very intense and there are problems to solve every single day. Also, I think the other reason we need to be on 24/7 is this is a relationship business, period. Mm-hmm. So when you're building relationships with surgeons, if you ignore them because it's the weekend or it's an evening, you're not going to build that relationship. And the two of us certainly have those relationships, but it goes far beyond just Eric and myself. Our head of engineering, for example, he's on a texting relationship basis with most of the surgeons we work with. And those relationships expand far beyond the 8 to 5 typical work day, Monday through Friday. So I think that relationship building component is another something that sets us apart because we're building a culture and we've recruited and brought in people who understand this and love it. It's one thing to understand it. It's another thing entirely to love it. So my leadership team loves this. We love this aspect of the job. We're at conferences on the weekends. We're doing design labs in our Colorado headquarters on Saturdays. And you have to be on 24/7 to build those relationships and move the business forward. So I think that's probably another nuance that's a little different. The customer intimacy in spine is something that is unparalleled compared to other sectors I've worked in where, yes, you have to be responsive, but you don't have that close connected relationship with your surgeon customer.
And now I'm going to add one thing as I was listening to that. So sometimes people lose sight of the fact, look, the surgeons are seeing patients during the day or they're in surgery. So the only time they have availability is in the evenings, on weekends, off hours, right? So that's when they have availability. And then these relationships that we talk about, well, what are we talking about during those relationships? We're talking about new approaches, new ideas around techniques for access into the spine, new implants, and different ways to fixate the spine or provide additional motion. Those texting, going back and forth, might talk about clinical study ideas or about new inventions that they have. And so and often that can only happen during those off hours. And so that's the piece, which is why it's so intense that, you know, during the regular hours, you're covering cases, you're running the business. And then when the surgeon is out of the OR and out of seeing clinic, that's when they're available. So you have to make yourself available. And frankly, in this particular industry, you got to get on the road. You got to get on a plane. You've got to be there. You got to go see the physician, sit down and whiteboard ideas or talk about the challenges they're having. Or if an instrument isn't working, how we can make it better for them. Because ultimately, they're taking care of the patient. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for solutions for better patient care. That's what gets us most excited is the patient care component. So if we can help the surgeon, that's how we're helping make patient lives better.
What is it about the spine that lends itself to this drive for innovation? I guess I'm thinking of it. It's a physical part of the body. It's bone and obviously tissue, but it's not something that's electrical. It's not something like the heart. It's something that maybe it's just because it's such a structural part of the body. You can imagine different ways of doing this. You can imagine different ways of placing screws or placing things that need to offer support. Is there something special about or unique about the spine that just opens minds and opens eyes to new ways of doing things perhaps differently than other parts of the body?
Yes. Here's what I would say to that is the spine is 26 joints. It's not one knee. So you've got a very complex structure and those 26 joints are all somewhat different. So it's not a one size fits all approach. And then on top of that, because the spine basically covers the length of the torso and the neck, there are multiple angles for approach. And so I think the spine is, to your point around innovation, there's still so much work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Lumbar spine surgery in particular, the clinical outcomes are not where they need to be. So patient reported outcome scores are still mid 60%. So we should be doing much, much better. And I think that's what drives certainly the HiRidge team as well as the surgeons we partner with to continue to white space some of this out and say, how can we do something better? You know, we talk about doubling our investment in R&D. We focus mostly, most people do, on the D, the development. But we're equally committed to the research, the R, because that's where we start to get into some of these fun conversations with surgeons who are also trying to brainstorm to fix these clinical outcomes and make them better. So yeah, I think there are a few reasons why the spine is trickier, but again, that's what makes it fun. And I think there's more upside to solve those clinical problems than in something like a knee replacement, just because it's a lot more simple.
When I was going through training, I think one of the best things that that helped me understand it was, think about the fact, Tom, that your head is about the weight of a bowling ball, okay? Now, that bowling ball has to be balanced over your hips, right? If it's too far forward or too far backwards, if it's tilted one way or the other, that enormous heavy bowling ball then has to have the right sagittal balance, or the balance of your head over your pelvis. And so that long spine, therefore, has to be addressed. And when we are looking at new technologies, whether it's to allow continued motion or it's or we're going to fuse the patient, either way, think of all the loads that your spine is carrying with that bowling ball as it's moving, right? And so Rebecca had mentioned all the joints of the spine. It's a very complex component of the anatomy, which is why innovation is constantly happening, because it is so complex. We don't have the final solution, even now 30 years later in spine. Mm-hmm. That iteration is why it's getting better and better, but it's slow because it's so complex.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So let's talk about High Ridge specifically, the R and the D. You're focused right now on scoliosis. That's where your lead product is. But what does your pipeline look like in 5 years? Do you have plans if you already have these products, then tell me. I don't did my research, but are you moving into lumbar and other parts of the spine? What does your portfolio look like in a few years?
Yeah. So we do have products. To your point, some of these have been the best kept secret in the industry, which is part of what we're changing with High Ridge. We have a very comprehensive portfolio, but it also has been lacking investment and resource for many, many years. So we're actually going to stand up several projects, and we are at the same time. And usually when I lay this out for people, they look at me like I'm insane. But we're able to do it because we're doubling that investment. We're hiring engineers. And we've actually structured the company under three franchises. So these teams, these cross-functional teams, are working in parallel to move forward in the area of complex spine, for sure. And that's where the Tether lives. But we also have a fantastic pedicle screw system. And we're innovating in that space very rapidly with additional products. Some are line extensions. Some are brand new solutions. Those have all been kicked off. The second pillar is motion preservation, which, of course, Mobi-C kind of leads that. But we're looking at new product launches in 2025 to augment that space and shore up our leadership position there. And then the third pillar is all things MIS surgery, which we think we have a huge opportunity to innovate there. We have four different new design team projects that are being stood up inside of that vertical. And so really the strategy here is you've got your foundational products, which we have as well, pedicle screws, cervical plates, biologics, inner body spacers. But these three verticals is where we're going to be focusing on our innovation. And just like we're here at this conference this weekend for the complex segment, we're at similar conferences for motion preservation and MIS. And so really our innovation strategy goes way beyond the next 3 to 5 years, because some of these take 18 months, some of these take several years. But we have a nice cadence that is a balance between kind of the single hits and the home runs and everything in between. So I'm excited about it, just knowing for years what we've wanted to do, all these ideas we had, and now we actually have the resourcing and the focus to go do it.
So Tom, what I would add to that is when I came over, and we probably talked about this 6 months ago, but when I came over to High Ridge, what I recognized was that there was this enormous portfolio of technology, which was fantastic because High Ridge had been built out of a number of acquisitions over the years. So they had this large portfolio. So really what the team has been able to do is build a culture where people want to come, a culture where people are focused. All the stuff we talked about earlier, standing up the new innovation, focused on the surgeon, bringing them out to learn from them, bringing them into our training facility. Again, things that sound easy but are actually very difficult, which is why some companies struggle and others don't. And I think when you put that right strategy together, you start to see the momentum that we're seeing here at High Ridge. We want to be the place that surgeons and sales reps and agents and new talent want to come. They want to bring their ideas, or they want to bring their momentum and their energy, and they want to work at a place where they can help impact patient lives, have fun at what they're doing, and fun defined by a team that understands how hard it is out there, and they're there to support them. Because it's hard to be in the field. Part of my long history in spine is I carried the bag for almost 10 years. So I know what it's like to be out there and trying to service these surgeons. So if we can project that across the organization, that's why people want to come and be part of an organization that understands what they need to help the surgeon take care of the patient.
I think you said you were also driven or drawn by the name High Ridge, given your fondness.
I love the name. Okay, I'm going to tell you I love the name, and I love the fact it's in Boulder.
There you go. So, it's a win-win, and it's got a great future. Just drawing back a bit of the industry at large and the news this week that that Stryker was divesting itself of its spinal implant business to the Viscogliosi brothers, who, as I noted in my LinkedIn post, have also a long history in spine, and I hope I'll be talking with them in the future. But you were the CEO of K2M, sold it to Stryker, acquired it in 2018. What are your thoughts of their divesting that portfolio 6 or 7 years later? Any thoughts?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I've known the Viscogliosi brothers for a very long time. We've all been in this industry. They're great guys, and I think there's an opportunity here for them. Stryker is a very large company, and what Kevin Lobo has been able to do with Stryker has been unbelievable. You look at the stock performance of Stryker compared to the rest of, you know, the comps in the space, and he just continues to do a great job there, right? And the team they have there, when I went over to Stryker after K2, you know, they have tremendous people. And it's some of the best people in the industry. What I would say is spine is different. Spine is run differently than other segments, even within orthopedics. Mm-hmm. And so I can't speak to the exact purposes of the divestiture. I can tell you that when K2M went over and I was running Stryker Spine, we had them at growth. It was exciting. Things were going well. Subsequent to that, you know, there's a lot of complexities in this market. And when you look at that broader performance of Stryker that has done so well, you know, I don't know where Spine was performing inside of there. I know there were very good people over there, a lot of people I know well. But I have to believe it made sense for Stryker when they think about their broader business, right? They have multiple businesses that are all very large, but each of which are no less than a $1 billion business that are spitting off tremendous profitability. Okay, so those are very good businesses. On the Strykers, I can't speak to what, you know, from 2021 to the present, but given their track record, they probably did a deep dive analysis and it made sense for them at this time. Now, going forward, it'll be interesting in the industry, right? So the Viscogliosi brothers coming in, they know the space, and it'll be interesting to see where they take spine. And it's a very exciting and dynamic industry. I love it. I love spine. Some people love it. Some people do not like it. Some people, it's like being in the trenches every day. It's trench warfare in many ways. But I enjoy that grind. I enjoy that grit that you have to have in that space. So I guess that my answer is I don't know why all the purposes behind that divestiture. I know that Stryker as a company will continue to do exceptionally well. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how the Viscogliosi brothers move forward and what culture they build. But I will tell you that part of why I got back into spine and joined High Ridge is I'm very excited about this team that Rebecca has built and this culture that's being built. I really do think we are the place to be in spine now because we're in that right size where we're big enough to make decisions and compete head to head. We're small enough to be much more nimble and get lots of products out quickly. It's really hard to do that as a large company. So while a lot of the companies have great products and a lot of the companies have good people, some very, very good people across this industry, many of them are my friends. But I think from a business perspective, there's a reason we're back to growth. It's because this is the place right now that has the energy and the focus on the things that I think are most important. I'll say it for like the fourth time on this interview, the surgeon and innovation. Those things are critical and you got to be responsive.
Yeah, I would just add one comment to that. Timing matters. And 14 months ago, we announced that HIG intended to acquire High Ridge. And we had to brand the company and separate from ZimVie and hire a commercial team, hire an executive team, start the innovation engine again. So 2024 was our setup year, and we are hitting our stride as we go into 2025 because we've got 14 months under our belt preparing for this moment. So timing matters, and I think we are very well positioned to have a blowout year in 25 because of the last 14 months and everything we've done to get ready for this. I think the Viscogliosi brothers will do a fantastic job as well, but they're kind of back at the starting point where we were 14 months ago. So we're excited about where we are in the process of standing up this company, and I think 2025 is going to be fantastic.
Does this, Rebecca, does it shake up the Etch-a-Sketch a little bit? Are you dealing with it now that you're a competitor is not Stryker, but rather a smaller company like yourselves or private equity-owned company like yourself? Does that change how you approach things? I'm guessing not, but I'm just asking the question.
I feel rock solid about our strategy. I think it's extremely well thought out and it's executing well. I think what's going to happen, in some ways it's a good thing, right? Because it should drive more innovation and it's more of a focus on what spine should be. So I think it should help the industry overall. But I'm very confident in where we're taking this company. I think we're starting to see the fruits of our labor and the best is yet ahead for us.
That's great. No, it's a great thing for certainly for the patients, but for people covering the industry as well. It's nice to have two innovative, experienced, scrappy companies going at it, and it'll be fun to watch.
It will be fun.
All right. Well, thank you both for taking some time away from the conference and for giving us your insights on the news.
Tom, thank you.
Thank you, Appreciate Tom. It.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, join us on Tuesday for our Device Talks Tuesday's deep dive. We'll be talking with Doug Evans, the CEO of Lung Pacer Medical. It's an amazing story and a really fascinating device to solve a huge problem that I wasn't aware of. So I'm really looking forward to co-hosting that conversation with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. Please make sure you register for Device Talks Boston. The early bird rate is still in effect. Go to boston.devicetalks.com. And we're opening registration for Device Talks Minnesota. That's happening on June 11th at the McNamara Alumni Center. So hope to see you there as well. Finally, don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn, connect with Chris Newmarker on LinkedIn, connect with Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn. And when you do, please share this podcast and let us know what you think about it. We'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. That's it, folks. Thanks again for being part of the Device Talks weekly audience and the Device Talks family. And we hope to see you at one of our events very soon. But we'll certainly have another Device Talks weekly podcast out to you next week. So take care, everybody.